My first guest that we have today was raised in a Greek Orthodox family. Actually, he was born on the island of Cyprus, and then when he was a young boy, his family moved to Great Britain and to the United Kingdom. There, he came to Christ eventually. Now, Paul has been on this program before, and quite some time ago, he did share how he came to Christ, and he shared a great deal of other things. But I don't believe we've ever asked him about some of the things we're going to be talking about today. Specifically, we're going to be talking about holy snakes, holy fire, and holy relics, although I think we've talked a little bit about holy relics before. But all these things as in the context of part of the superstitious, unbiblical worship of the Orthodox, as in Greek, Russian, and so on, Orthodox Church. And so it's a very, very important subject. It's an under-discussed subject, I think, the Orthodox Church. And so we are looking forward to this discussion. Also, we want to talk a little bit about a new Bible that has come out as well. And I think this is going to be very, very valuable information to you, the listeners. And we're simply calling our guest Paul today because he has a very valuable ministry. And quite frankly, the Orthodox Church, there is a bit of a persecuting spirit there, and I just don't want to do anything to jeopardize the ministry that he's working at. Paul, we've talked about this before, but there is a great ignorance among evangelicals when it comes to the Orthodox Church, isn't there?
Yes, there's a great deal of ignorance, and unfortunately, there are people who claim to be evangelicals, born-again Christians, and they actually go over and join the Orthodox and become Orthodox.
I can think of one offhand, and it's Francis Schaeffer's son, Frankie Schaeffer, who has really, really gone off the deep end. But that's one famous person I can think of. He claimed to be an evangelical, and now he's an Orthodox. I suppose he might say he's an evangelical Orthodox. Do they do that like the Roman Catholics do?
Some Western Orthodox people might describe themselves as that. One person who made a big impact is Peter Gilchrist, who was with Campus Crusade for Christ.
Oh.
And he went over to the Antiochian branch of the Orthodox Church and took with him about 2,000 other evangelicals.
2,000. Now, you know, going back to, I asked you a question that was kind of a naive question, I guess, in a way, because I said, are there Orthodox people who call themselves evangelical Orthodox? And you said, yes, maybe in the West some. That would not be something that people would want to do, would they, in, for instance, Russia or someplace else? I mean, don't the Orthodox, that word evangelical in and of itself, would that sort of say these people are not of us, these people are really, you know, opposed to what we believe?
Yes, evangelical is a dirty word if you're
what I was getting
in
at.
Greece or Cyprus or, yeah. Or Russia.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. I was a little naive there. Well, let's we mentioned holy snakes, holy fire, holy relics. Let's start with holy snakes. Now, you told me about some videos I watched regarding all three of those issues. And let's start with holy snakes. These were bizarre things I saw on these videos. But tell us, you know, start at the beginning and tell us about the holy snakes of the Virgin Mary.
On a particular Greek island called Kefalonia, there's this phenomenon that takes place every year. It takes place between August the 5th to August the 15th. And August the 15th is very important in the Orthodox calendar because that is the what they call Gimisistis Theotogu, which is the sleeping or the assumption of the Mother of God. That's when she ascended into heaven bodily.
As they put it.
Yes, the Roman Catholics also celebrate that. During this period, there are these snakes that appear and they make their way to the church, they climb up onto the icons and where the Bible as well is the Gospels are being read, and on the bishop's throne, and also people pick them up and, well, play with them, really put them around on their bodies, and they'll place them on icons. And then there's all sorts of stories that the snakes really they're showing veneration towards the icon of Mary.
Now, these snakes have like a marking on their head as well, don't they?
Yes, they're supposed to have a marking of a cross on their head, or they have certain dots that are in the shape of a cross.
Yeah. Now, I read about the snakes, and there's a name, I forgot the name of them, and they are just a type of snake. But these snakes, of course, there's a story to this too, which I'm sure you'll share with us, why, you know, there's always a story why these snakes are coming out and all that sort of thing. But
yes,
this actually happens, though. Snakes actually do come out around that time.
Well, there are various explanations about this. I mean, the one that the Orthodox Church would have you believe is that it's a miracle, and what happened, I believe it was back in the 1700s when the pirates would raid the island, and, you know, would take women captives, and they would go to convents and capture women, that miraculously these nuns were changed into snakes, and the pirates got frightened and ran away. And then, you know, there are stories like when they don't appear, if there's a year that they don't appear, then it's a bad omen. Mm-hmm. Like there's going to be a bad earthquake and so on. Now, I have heard from a friend who actually visited the island at that time, and this person found out that what happens is that local individuals, they go seeking the snakes, especially the baby ones. They pick up the baby ones, and they take them to the church. Another thing that certain local individuals do is that they set fire to certain parts of woods, and the fire forces the snakes to flee, and they manipulate it so they go in the direction towards the church or the monastery.
Well, I saw a video, and of course in that video would be used to convince other people, I'm sure, that this is truly a miracle of God and so on and so forth. And when people really are deceived, you can tell them the truth. You could tell them people were rounding up these snakes and bringing them to the church, and they wouldn't believe it. I mean, that's the way it works.
No, and even, you see, even if it is true, even if it is, you know, some miracle that happens, you know, in the Orthodox Church, remember what Christ said in Matthew 7. So not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. And many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then I will profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity.
Well, let's go on from holy snakes, if we've got that covered, to holy fire, because I want to just move along, and there's a number of things here we want to cover. And one thing I do want to point out again is the Orthodox Church is not a Christian church, and people don't seem to realize that. And they are very, very similar, of course, to the Roman Catholic Church in much of their doctrine, although they don't have a pope, obviously. There's a few differences, but they are every bit, wouldn't you say, Paul, that they're every bit as superstitious as the Roman Catholic Church?
Yes, they are. The tragedy of it is that Christ is hidden in the Orthodox Church, and there are many things to divert your attention away from Christ and onto such miracles and onto his mother instead of worshipping Christ himself.
Exactly. The snakes draw the attention to their Mary. It's not the true Mary. And, of course, for this special holiday when she was supposedly assumed into heaven. And so it's not Christ. Now, from holy snakes to holy fire on a holy Saturday, I believe, as it happens on Holy Saturday, it's called. This is an annual supposed miracle which is documented every year in Jerusalem since, and correct me if I'm wrong, 1106, and it's even televised live into many Orthodox countries around the world. Now, what happens on that day?
Right. This is called Holy Fire, or really the Greeks, they call it Aion Phos, which is really Holy Light. And on the Holy Saturday, which in the Eastern Orthodox Church, it's celebrated at a different time to the Western Church because they use a different calendar to calculate it. So this is the day before Resurrection Sunday. And around noon on Saturday, there is this special ceremony where it is claimed the patriarch, the Greek Orthodox patriarch of Jerusalem, when he is doing the liturgy in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, miraculously fire sent by God lights his candles. He has a big bunch of candles, I think it's about 33 candles he's holding, and they are miraculously lit. And it only happens with the Orthodox Church, and which proves that they are the one and only true church. You know, the Orthodox claim, or the Armenian Church has tried it, and it doesn't work for them. And there's a story goes that the Armenians persuaded the at that time it was the Ottoman Turks who were ruling, mm-hmm. not to allow the Orthodox to perform this ceremony, but to allow the Armenians to do it, and the Turks agreed to that. It didn't work for the Armenians, and there was some Orthodox priest who was standing near a pillar, and lightning struck the pillar, and then it lit the candles of the priests, the Orthodox priests, and you can still see the crack in the pillar today.
I have a feeling the crack predated the story, to be honest. Yeah. And so that becomes something else. It's almost like an icon, I imagine. Then they gather around the pillar, no doubt.
Oh, well. Yes. Yeah.
And so this fire, the way I understand it, I was reading about this, after it's lit, people light, you know, other candles, and everyone's passing it around and lighting little torches and candles. And for 33 minutes, according to this story, now you're the expert on this, but it's not supposed to burn anyone. You're supposed to be able to hold it, touch yourself with it, and it doesn't burn. Is that an aspect of this?
Well, yes, that's what they say. Mm-hmm. But before I forget, let me say that when the light is being spread, you know, from the patriarch's candles to the rest of the people, some of these candles are flown by plane to certain Orthodox countries. The flame mustn't go out, and when the plane lands, then, you know, at Easter time, then the flame from the candle, which, or, you know, you can trace it back to the Holy Light, then it spread through Orthodox countries. Mm. But as to whether this flame is not supposed to burn, and you can see video clips of people putting the flame on their faces and passing their hands through it, I've not myself seen anyone keep their hand in there,
exactly.
You know, for more than a few seconds.
That's what I noticed, too. They would take it, and there was a young man on the video you told me about, and he was passing it back and forth across under his chin, sort of. I saw him kind of jerk back once a little, but he never left it there. If it doesn't burn, why can't they put their fingers in it and just leave them there, or put it to their face and leave it there?
Yes, also, being Jerusalem and a hot place, I think people would be perspiring and their faces would be, you know, damp. Mm-hmm. And that would also tend to take some of the heat away.
Oh, this is just another layer of superstition and keeps the people in bondage. And isn't it just another part of the wall that's been built up between them and Christ?
Yes, it is. But now, as to whether this is a miracle, I mean, I've looked into this, and there was a very well-known Greek man who is well respected. His name is Korais. He lived in the 1800s, and he investigated this, and he said it was just a sham. Mm. And certain monks, which I've heard, and priests have admitted that it's not really a miracle. It's the patriarch has already in there a small flame, which is hidden, and he uses that to light his candles. And there was another a Greek man who appeared on television in Greece, and he was explaining scientifically how this could happen, and he actually demonstrated. He had some candles right before the camera. They lit spontaneously, but he explained that these candles had been previously dipped in a special solvent which had phosphorus in it, and as the solvent evaporated, the phosphorus being in contact with air then ignited and lit the candle.
So there are some explanations, but again, keeps the people in bondage. And if people want to believe these things, they will believe it. It's like the Roman Catholic Church. It's a very sensual religion then that appeals to, again, the senses and the natural man. Holy snakes, holy fire. Now, this is the one that really is macabre. I mean, it is just ghoulish, holy relics. And we've talked about this one a bit in the past, but the Orthodox Church, like the Roman Catholic Church, officially holds that relics have miraculous power and are to be venerated, as they put it. That's the way I understand it. But why don't you tell us a little bit about these relics?
Holy relics, they're the remains of saints. The remains could be their skeleton, bones, fingers, the skull, hair, or their clothing. And they're usually kept in ornate boxes. Mm-hmm. People bow down to them and kiss the boxes, and it's claimed that the relics don't smell bad, that they're actually fragrant, and miracles happen. So if you're near, so there are claims like if you're someone suffering from cancer, for example, and is by the saint's relics, he could be cured of cancer.
Now, are there certain relics that are supposed to have certain power as well?
Yes.
Specific,
Yeah. Like on the island of Tinos in Greece, it's not actually a relic, but it is a special icon that has miraculous healing powers. You also get strange stories, so like perhaps a certain saint might have two heads. Let me explain that, because you find that you go to one monastery and they claim to have the skull of Saint Chrysostomos in say a monastery in Greece, and yet if you go to Russia to another monastery, they'll have the saint's skull there as well. So it could be that the saint had two heads.
Yeah, and I talked about being macabre. I saw in this video that they have, the Roman Catholic Church does this too, they dig up the bodies or exhume the bodies of some of these saints, and they have been obviously preserved, they have been embalmed, and they still have a body, and they will put those in glass coffins, and you got little children looking at this, and it's not the most pleasant thing in the world for these kids to be looking at it, to say the least, and they take those around as well.
Oh, yes. In fact, just recently on the news here in Britain, in the city of Liverpool, they were parading the bones of Saint Therese.
Yeah.
And there were crowds of people following that.
And when we say bones, I mean, we're talking about their skin on these bones sometimes, too.
Oh, yes.
It's not just bare bones, is what I'm saying.
And their hair. You could still see their hair.
And so this is what they're parading around. And I understand the North American Church, the Orthodox Church, has three complete sets of relics. St. Herman of Alaska, St. John Maximovich, is that right? And St. Alex Toth. Apparently they have bodies from these North American saints that they take around, and people go to them hoping for miracles to occur.
Yes. The relics are important also in the sense that for the Orthodox people, it gives the bishop authority, and they consecrate churches with the relics, so that on the altars in the Roman Catholic and Orthodox churches, or really I should say beneath the altar, mm-hmm. they would have relics of saints. Mm-hmm. And I know in the Orthodox Church, they have a special tablecloth which they use on the altar. It's called an antimension. That has sewn in the seams inside some relic of a saint, and that gives you the authority to do the Eucharist. And if the priest needs to, say, visit someone who's sick and give communion, then they take that cloth with them.
Now, you brought up the Roman Catholic Church. I know that the Roman Catholic churches, if I'm not mistaken, are supposed to have a relic in every altar, as you say. And we were last summer, we were up at La Crosse, Wisconsin, for the opening of Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. It's just an incredible thing out in the country, acres and acres of shrines and an ornate church and so on and so forth. And we were there, of course, standing for the truth, and we had gospel signs confronting error of Romanism, and we were handing out tracts and so on and so forth, interacting where we could and preaching where we could to people. But up there on that day, they brought in the bones of a Mohawk Indian woman who became a nun, and they consecrated the altar, put the bones in the altar. And it's interesting because this blending of heathenism with Christianity, which is indeed Romanism then, it's a superstitious heathenish abomination masquerading as Christianity. It is interesting that the Mohawk Indian woman who becomes a nun, her body is put under the altar of the church, or parts of her body, and on the grounds they have a monument to her with a turtle on it. The turtle was sacred to the Mohawk tribe. Now, it is amazing to me, Paul, as you look across this Roman Catholic religion all around the world, and the things we're talking about, and so much more. You look at the Orthodox Church and the things we've been talking about, and so much more. This is not even an issue with many Christians. They really believe that the Orthodox and the Roman Catholic churches are indeed Christian churches with some strange habits and rituals.
Yes, it's sad. There's so much more I could say, like the Virgin Mary's belt. Which has been handed down and is preserved, and you can go to a monastery and see her belt. And what they would do, say there's an infertile woman, they'd get a ribbon, put it, rub the ribbon on Mary's belt, and then the woman wears the ribbon, and then she will be able to have children. But this belt belonging to Mary, you can find it in several different monasteries. There's one in the monastery of Vatopedi, which is on Mount Athos in Greece. There's a monastery in Germany, one in Syria, and one in Georgia that also have Mary's belt, perhaps a part of it.
They make her out to be pretty fashionable and had a whole array of belts for different occasions. But, you know, it reminds me here, and little surprise it would, but of the American Indians. And we have Indian tribes in Wisconsin, and they still have all their rituals. And they will rub one person as they're coming in, will wave various plants over and around the people, and they will rub some on their palms, a certain something else, some natural element, maybe have some water there that they might sprinkle on them, and so on and so forth. Sounds familiar, and of course it does, because again, it's heathenism. And so when they come to this belt, I think people ought to realize, or some of these relics, they don't just come and look at these things saying, well, this is interesting. I mean, they will fall down in front of them, won't they? And actually worship.
Oh, yes. They venerate these things. Another story I should tell you is about in this place in Greece, Sparta, near Patras. Mm-hmm. Horses are known to make their own way into a church and prostrate themselves before an icon.
So that's another story that's told.
Yes.
Well, let's go to, I want to keep an eye on the clock here. I have several things I want to accomplish yet. And one of them is to have you tell us about yet another Bible coming out, another translation of the Bible. And this one is an Orthodox Bible. Tell us about that.
Yes, this is called the Orthodox Study Bible. Now, there was one that came out some years ago, but it was really just the New Testament. But now it's the whole Bible, and it's in English. Mm-hmm. And the Old Testament has been translated using the old Greek Septuagint version of the Old Testament, and the New Testament basically is using the New King James Version translation. And most of the people involved in this translation, there are some sort of Greeks and perhaps Romanians among them, but a lot of them would be American and British converts. It's published by Thomas Nelson, and there are lots of notes which give an orthodox slant to the text of the Bible, so it's really interpreted in the Greek Orthodox way.
Well, I don't believe in notes in the Bible, other than to clarify a word or something like that, or maybe a location or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a very dangerous thing, and of course we couldn't recommend this one either by what it was translated from, or how it was translated, or by who, or the notes either.
I'll give you some just a few examples of what's inside it. Now, perhaps you might read, I mean, as Christians, we would read perhaps in a study Bible or in some commentaries, you know, you'd read about types of Christ in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. But in this Orthodox study Bible, you don't see that. You see types of Mary in the Old Testament. And so they would give as an example that the Garden of Eden is a type of Mary, or the burning bush is an image of Mary.
So again, pointing to Mary is the one to really worship. I mean,
yes,
that's what it comes down to.
Yes.
So we will just give a warning on that, because I want to move on to one more thing, because we're about out of time. But I know that you have a heart for the Orthodox people, and obviously Christians need to come to the conclusion that the Orthodox Church, all the grievous errors and superstitions of the Orthodox Church, ought to be exposed and resisted by the followers of Christ. But at the same time, we ought to have a concern and a love for the souls of the Orthodox people. I know that you do. And I was just wondering, you know, you labor at getting the word out to the Orthodox people. There's various things you do. I know you have a table at a couple of different events and things like that. We haven't talked to you for a while, so maybe you could just update us a little briefly on your work that way.
I mean, once a year I do have a book table at a special cultural event where lots of Greeks attend, and I go to parks as well, and I have my book table at other cultural festivals, and I give out Bibles, New Testaments, and Christian literature. Mm-hmm. I also visit people, especially elderly people in nursing homes and hospitals. Sometimes I get called upon by translation. My local council has a translation department, and they may call upon me to translate, to interpret for a Greek person who can't speak English well.
Sure. So you're kept busy in addition to the other things you do for a living.
And now as it's coming towards sort of the end of the year, around this time, I'm distributing a lot of calendars in Greek, which have Bible verses for people to read and evangelistic messages.
Well, I have one more question I wanted to ask you, now that you bring up that issue, Bibles and scripture verses. At one time, the Roman Catholic people obviously were forbidden to read the Bible. The whole world was forbidden to read the Bible by the Roman Catholic Church, by the Pope. Eventually, of course, the Roman Catholic people had access to the Bible, and now there is sort of a grudging understanding among the Pope and his men that it looks bad if you don't let your people read the Bible, if you don't sort of give a lukewarm, tepid encouragement to read it. Now, is it so with the Orthodox Church? I mean, is it pretty much the traditions, the teachings of the priesthood, and then the Bible, is that sort of downplayed, the importance of it, other than having it come through the priests, or are the people encouraged to read the Bible?
Well, things have changed over the years. I mean, in the past, the Bible was very much in the background. People are encouraged to read more the lives of saints rather than the Bible itself. Mm-hmm. But I do know of certain Orthodox churches that have regular Bible studies, but they do warn people to be careful when reading the Bible, and that it's the church really that should interpret the Bible, and that there is a danger that you may go astray if you read the Bible by yourself, or especially if you get caught up with some cult. So they really do try to warn you and guard you when it comes to studying the Bible.
Well, they're certainly preaching another Jesus. They've received another spirit, and it is another gospel. And so we ought to be concerned for them. And I know certain areas of America have enclaves of Orthodox people. So the evangelical churches in those areas ought to see that as part of their mission field and reach out to these people with the gospel and also bring light to them with regard to the superstitious practices and grievous errors of their church. And I mentioned a persecuting spirit last time, I think, one of the last times we had you on this program. I was sort of raked over the coals by some Orthodox people. It was some publication, I don't know what country it was out of, and they wrote a little article about me, so maybe we'll hear from them again. But we certainly really don't care, especially it's easy for me to talk. I'm not in some of these countries where a person could get in a lot of trouble for standing for the gospel against the errors of the Orthodox Church. But we certainly wish you the best, Paul, and trust the Lord will bless your ministry.
Thank you. I value your prayers.